and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and I'm here with Tristan Vick this week. How's it going, Tristan?
Oh, it's going great. I'm doing well. I'm doing better than I deserve, or whatever Dave Ramsey, the financial guru, says. Haven't listened to him in about 10 years, but I remember his catchphrases.
Well, that's more than I remember from Dave Ramsey. So this week we had on Buzz Carrick from Third Degree blog website, and we talked a lot about Oscar Pareja and, you know, his origins and what he's done, and we talked a little bit about the academy and goalkeepers and quite a few. Let's just say we ran the gamut of FC Dallas topics, and it was a really good conversation. But before we get to the interview, let's talk a little bit about FC Dallas's game this past week and what they've got coming up next week. Tristan?
Yeah, so this weekend we played LAFC in bright, sunny LA, and we made one of the top posts on the MLS subreddit. Well, it wasn't really us. It was FC Dallas, or sorry, LAFC and the crowd. Second game ever at their new stadium down in LA, a beautiful stadium. And it was a bright... Yeah, man, I saw a great post on there. I don't remember who said it, but they were like, oh, they're making FC Dallas feel at home. I like that. Half empty stadium. So, way to go, LAFC. I think it was a great match. My favorite thing about the match, and we'll get into this more with the interview and with Buzz, is Santi Mosquera is really turning into somebody who's playing aggressive and making the most of the chances he gets. He doesn't let the game come to him. He takes the game to the other team. That aggression is great to see. I really like this team, and I'm looking forward to this weekend whenever LA Galaxy come to visit and that big name, Giovanni Dos Santos, comes to town. Gonna see Gio.
The wrong guy there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. What's the other guy's name? Ashley Cole.
Zalatan.
No, it's Ashley Cole. I'm pretty sure it's Ashley Cole. But, Zalatan. Yeah, that stuff you put in your gumbo.
Or something. Anyways, so let's go ahead and, without further ado, let's go ahead and play the interview with Buzz Carrick from Third Degree. The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. Men's National Team news and coverage. Hey, Buzz, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on with us. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about your work at Third Degree, and we're big fans of that. We love everything from the practice reports all the way to through your preseason tour you did, and gave us some gave all the fans some insight into what the team was up to out in Arizona. So let's just start with, maybe tell us how you came to be where you're at with the blog, with the writing. Tell us your story.
Sure. I am a lifelong soccer player, limited referee, limited coach, aficionado. I mean, I'm terrible, but I've loved the game since I was a kid. And when I got out of college, I was working in Boston, and I came back to Dallas without having a job. This was in 87, and I wanted to learn HTML. My career's in broadcasting, sports broadcasting specifically, and I have always felt that television and the internet would converge eventually, which clearly it has by now. So in an effort to learn how to do HTML coding, I made a website, called it Third Degree, and started writing down some thoughts about soccer. Back then we called it a fanzine. You remember that terminology?
Yeah. I do remember.
In the early days, it was just junk. I mean, I brought up a blurb about a game, and I wrote a chart of what the normal lineup was for Dallas. And after the end of the 97 season, I wrote like a, I don't know if you call it a commentary or a critique of the way TV was done by the league. Cause I had, as I said, my career is in TV and I actually worked on MLS in 96 and 97 when I was in Boston doing Revolution games. As a side note, I got to Red Hat the first MLS Cup, which is kind of cool.
Awesome.
And then once I started the blog, this was all pre things like Big Soccer and chat boards, things like email list serves existed. And some of the guys in the Inferno asked me if they could join in and help write, one of which was Peter Welton. He's the only one who's still with me from the early days. Mm-hmm. And then just over the years, we've added stuff from time to time, and everyone that ever has worked for us has been a volunteer. So our limiting resource is manpower. So we try and divvy up responsibilities, and we try and think of things that nobody else is doing. Like, for example, a basic game story. Well, there are 200 of them for any time there's a game. So that was always been a waste of time for us. Uh-huh. Instead, we focused on things outside of that, whether it be commentary or practice reports, which everyone seems to like, and all the other things we do. Now, practice sports specifically started in probably 98 or 99. I was working a job where I had lots of downtime. Mm-hmm. We were developing a product and we're waiting to launch it. And I just asked my boss if I could go to practice because we were, you know, 15 minutes away, I think, from Green Hill. And I just sat on this little bleachers, little six-row bleachers on the side of the field and watched. And maybe the second or third time I went, I started writing stuff down. And that's when one of the assistant coaches came over to ask me who I was and what I was
doing. Yeah.
Well, at the time, I was doing a little bit of TV for the league, so I just said, I'm working for Fox. They were like, oh, okay, great. So maybe the third or fourth time after that, I just wandered over after practice and started talking to Dave Durr about what was going on. At this stage, there was never anybody else there. There were no PR, no reporters, no nothing. Just me and the coaches. And after a while, I started trying to make a little practice blurb out of it and put it in the blog. And that, of course, got a lot of attention.
Yeah, those things are awesome. How have the different coaches allowed you access? I know that like sometimes you'll leave stuff out if.
Yeah.
Does that trust have to be rebuilt with every managerial staff, or do they probably leave you alone? Or?
A little bit. Jeffries was the first one who said something to me at the press conference where they introduced him to everybody. He actually said, "Oh, I know who you are. I need you to change what you're doing." So he said when they were at the Fire, they used to read all my stuff, and I would go on Friday when the lineup is really clear, and I'd say, oh, here's what the lineup's going to be. So because of him, I started going earlier in the week when the lineup is less clear, and I stopped trying to say, oh, here's what I saw, here's going the lineup going to be. I still try and break down the drills they do, and if the lineup's not clearly obvious, I'll list the groups if it's disguisable. But directly ask your question, since Jeffries came in, every coach that's come in already knows who I am and usually just reminds me, try not to talk about tactics and lineups, which I think I do pretty well. I try and disguise the obvious lineup situations when you see them, and I try and talk about overall riding concepts and leave out the details of like, oh, they're focused on some specific guy of the other team or something. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. You can definitely tell that, you know, you're trying to give us as much information as possible, but yet still be sensitive to, you know, any kind of game planning that's going on.
Right.
So,
well, most coaches have responded really well to any criticisms I write or when I write out my opinion of what the team's doing or what a player's doing. They say, well, you know, you're coming and watching in practice, so at least you're basing this opinion on something you're seeing and not just guessing what's happening or just making up what you think is happening.
Yeah, you're not just some guy with a computer and a microphone.
Right. Not that there's nothing wrong with that, but they give you a certain amount of credit if you're there once or twice a week and at least base it on what you're seeing in training, especially if you're talking about a player who may not play very much. Mm-hmm. If you're going to talk about where he is and how he is or what he looks like, you better be able to back it up with being with having been at practice.
Sure. Are there any other, like, I guess, dedicated FC Dallas like beat writers or whatever that are out there all the time, or is it you or?
Well, there's nobody that comes every day. That's always been the case. Mm-hmm. Steve Davis is there almost every week on late in the week because he's doing stuff for the team on the air, so he comes on Fridays. Back in the day when he was a morning news writer, he was there quite frequently, just like Tobias Lopez was, and he was the Fort Worth Star-Telegram writer. Mm-hmm. These days, obviously, John Arnold, who works for the morning news, he's there usually early in the week and then late in the week. Denise from Aldea.
Yeah.
Is there quite frequently. And then anyone who works for the team, of course, Carter there all the time. Carlos is there all the time.
So you've been around the team since the beginning. Like, what is, would you say?
97.
Yeah. 97. Well, okay. Well, it's practically the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, what is the like overall media coverage trending been? Is it getting more and more play, or is it still kind of?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's significantly bigger. The first couple of years, there was never been anybody at practice but myself. And then once in a while, you would get a writer from the morning news or the Star-Telegram. But most of the time, they didn't know anything about soccer. So really, you had at that point a bare bones coverage. And now there's everywhere, you know, you have TV shows about the league, you have national media about the league. Even just what the team does has accelerated since back then. They used to not have any media of their own, and now they have several people. And of course, there's 7 or 8 podcasts about even just a team like FC Dallas, which doesn't have a huge audience. There's 2 radio shows on the air in English, and I can't remember, since I don't speak Spanish, if there is a Spanish one. But I would say it's night and day. It's a complete, would that be 180 change from when I started, when I was really the only one. I mean, for a decade, other than your one game preview article you get in the paper, I was the only one doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting to see as far as the, I guess you could say, the development and evolution of that goes. In terms of the managers, since you've kind of dealt with them all, can you kind of compare what's been some of the best? Because you see a lot of the downtime, the off the field action, with whether it's practice, that type of an atmosphere. Would you say Pareja has been the most connected to and involved in defining the culture of the club as a whole and kind of making it his own? It seems to me that he's kind of been given free rein to kind of do what he thinks is right for the club, and the Hunts just kind of back him as long as he doesn't want too much money.
Well, I think Oscar's impact on the culture of the club is just a byproduct of Oscar's nature. It's just the kind of guy he is. I don't think you could say there's a plan where he's like, oh, I'm going to make the culture be heavily Latin and super chummy where everybody gets along. He's definitely what you call a player coach, I think. And of course, because he was a player, but
right,
even just the sense that he's putting arms around guys and being worried about their mentality and their comfort level and is everything okay with you. Previous coaches that would have an assistant who was kind of like that, whose job is more to put an arm around guy. So I don't think Oscar said, I'm here to change the culture of the team. He definitely had a significant role in the way it is, but it was almost because when they kicked off the academy, they hired him to do it. So he set up the academy the way he thought it should be set up. And that carried over once he left. And when he came back, it sort of instilled itself into the whole thing. But there definitely have been people that have sought to create, a closeness with the team. It's just not quite as much as Oscar has, because he's been there himself and can put his arm around guys. And it's just the kind of guy who will let somebody live with him, like Castillo lived in his house, you know.
Right.
He's just a emotional, sensitive guy who cares about people's feelings more than maybe some other coach who might have been like, we're pros, we're going to be straight up and upfront and cut and dried, and this is what we do.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about comforting these players, because you hear all the time about there's so many players that have gone over to Europe from South America when they're still, before they even turn 18 in many cases, and they're very hyped after like a youth World Cup or something, and then they kind of flame out because they went over way too early and they didn't have somebody over there, and they're going to these big teams and not these smaller clubs. And I think that Oscar, especially with the South Americans, really can. I feel like we don't do enough at times to sell that, like, hey, if you're an 18-year-old guy in Colombia who's already made it far in Copa Libertadores or the Copa Sudamerica, like, come ply your trade here, get some time. This guy is great at developing talent.
Well, because of Oscar's professional career in Colombia and with the national team, he has a reputation. So you remember when Mosquera signed, he said he picked Dallas over the other offers he has because of Oscar, because Oscar's reputation of developing particularly South American players and helping them progress their career. So Oscar has a built-in reputation, and Fernando is part of that as well.
Right.
And so they may able to make a lot of headway in South America because of that reputation that transcends just the United States, like an American coach might, for example. People in South America know who he is.
Yeah, I think it, especially with Atlanta and some of the other DPs that have been signed this season, you're seeing MLS become, I mean, the development academies are starting to pay dividends, but signing young and in some cases old South American attacking midfielders and attacking forwards is becoming a strategy to create a really competitive team. And it's almost like Oscar's known that for the past 5-6 years, and they're just now catching up to him.
Yeah, he has. And they essentially consider a young South American the same as they do a homegrown. You know, some of the South Americans that have come in at 20, 21, deal was 18, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's the same to them. Like, once they get here, they treat them all the same. You know, they do a really nice job. And some of this comes from the fact that the Hunts know, or we all know, the Hunts aren't going to spend a bunch of money. So the only way to win is to find young guys and develop them. So they consider, in their case, South America and the homegrown system to be the same thing. And I think you're seeing for the first time, it's not necessarily about South American because we're South American. It's South American because of the value. You can get more talent for less if you bring them in from a country or a team that isn't hype. Whereas if you're trying to bring a young guy from Europe, there's all this hype that raises the price. But you're seeing that with Nedialko, for example, who is, for relative terms, youngish. They got a value buy. So great. That's the same to them. Bring in a young guy, play him up, development him up. And that's how you keep your team good year after year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fascinating to read the stories of the Colombian team from the late 80s, mid 80s to the early 90s. And then remember that Oscar was in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
Turmoil that was going on with regards to not just the country, but the teams itself and how involved the cartels were. And Oscar's story about going and meeting and playing with Escobar I think that's awesome. I think it's such a good story that and shows kind of he's been everywhere. And if Oscar can't sell you, it means you just earn it for the money.
Yeah. Well, that Colombian team probably would have been a legit World Cup contender if Higuita hadn't got suspended, because they had to go a backup keeper. That team was amazing.
Oscar was
a supporting player in that team. You know, there was Mavis Valderrama and Alvarez midfield, but that team was just gorgeous. If they hadn't lost their keeper, what a story that could have been.
I agree completely. I'm almost hesitant to think what would be different about FC Dallas if Oscar was from Brazil instead of Colombia. Maybe we wouldn't be able to get those bargains.
I don't know that we can afford Brazilians.
It makes a little bit of a premium on those guys. So let's talk about some of those young South Americans. This season I've missed ever since he got sold. I've missed Castillo's brilliance. But I think we're seeing the development of somebody who's finally living up to filling those shoes with Mascaro.
Right.
Have you been impressed with his past couple matches? The way he's kind of, I think last season we had a lot of chances created, but people weren't taking as many chances as possible. And I feel like Mascaro is kind of forcing the issue and it's yielded dividends.
Well, the biggest part about missing Castillo is the balance. It wasn't just that he was good. It was the fact that he and Barros were similar and the two of them together put the back line under pressure and created gaps, which Diaz was able to exploit. Once you lost Castillo, the team came one-sided, and then defensively you can key it that your left are Dallas right, and it made him hard for Dallas to do business. So when we saw Mascara in the preseason, the people that were watching, which was probably just me, got pretty excited about the idea, because you see a player that can penetrate, although he does go middle, but he does penetrate like Barros does. Now, of course, there's taking a little bit of time to get used to the league, but if Oscar would have just left him out there this whole time, that also would have been fine, but you might have lost some games. So instead, you see other guys getting a longer run. And to be fair, you have to give the locker room a chance. If a guy plays well or trains well and doesn't get in, then he says, "What? Why even bother?" You know, if a guy does a good job, no matter how much you think the guy behind him is eventually going to be the guy, you got to leave him out there. So it was really just going to be a matter of time before Mascara became an influential player. And I think you're starting to see the dividends of that early. It's still early in the season, really.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we had the anticipation of a deep run in the Champions League. So we're one of those teams with lots of games in hand, which is kind of nice. That said, I've been really impressed. Dustin, what did you think of his performance this weekend? And what questions do you have regarding, I guess, the integration of him, how quickly he's looked as far as being able to integrate well? I kind of wish Coleman had been integrated as well and quickly.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go next. I think Santi's definitely getting more confident, and you can see that with, you know, all those chances he had during the LAFC game, like that one where he kind of chipped the keeper and the defender had to clear it off the line. But to your point about Coleman, what's your take on Coleman there, Buzz?
Well, the biggest difference between those two players is mental. I think it was Colin Clark that talked to me once about how the group that he came out of his academy with had about 40 players in it, and only two of them made it. And Colin said that there were players much more talented than him. He made it for something else, and it was the mind, the will, the heart, whatever you want to call it. So the difference between Mosquera and Coleman is mostly mental. By the time you get to this level, everybody can play. The difference is something else. And it shows up with those two guys in the split second decision in the box when you're making the decision that's going to get you a goal or not. Mosquera in those situations is calm and usually makes the right decision. Coleman is not. He, I don't know, clenches, freezes up, makes the wrong decision.
Yeah, you kind of see a little momentary panic.
That's the big difference.
Gotcha. So we've already talked about Oscar and, you know, kind of where he came up with in Colombia. And since he started as a manager, what changes have you seen in Oscar?
Well, this is the first time
as he goes about business.
Sure. This is the first time that Oscar's had to rebuild a team. When he was here at the academy, he put that together. When he was with the national team, the 17th, I think, he helped put that team together. He goes to Colorado, puts a team together. He comes back here, he puts a team together and rides it through the typical 4-season-ish cycle. And he builds it up, has 2 60-point seasons, and the team comes back down. That's the natural progression of teams. So this is the first time he's had to go through the downturn and now try and reset, rebuild a team to go back up. So this is an interesting time for Oscar, and it'll be an interesting time to see if he can do it. This is the hurdle there where most coaches get fired. So if he can get through this phase, he'll put himself in the class of coaches who will stick a place and be there a long, long time. So it's an interesting question, and I think they rebuilt defense successfully. And this is all one of the reasons why I actually expected FC Dallas to have a slow start. I thought they would be right at or right out of the playoff picture until the summer window, when they would do something that would enable them to then fight to get for the end of the playoffs into those late spots. So the fact that he's constructed his defense well enough to drop the goals down to a goal a game, you're going to win a lot of games or tie a lot of games if you're only allowing a goal a game. So now he has the luxury of Dallas being higher in the standings, and he's able to go get a player, hopefully, this summer that can take them up to the next level. So they're actually ahead of where I thought they would be. In terms of the way Oscar manages, there's not much change, to be honest. He always has had the same philosophy that he developed when he was a captain and a player, which is results matter, performance matters, this philosophy of find a way. You know, he's the same guy he's always been. There's never any hidden agendas with him. Everything's on the front. He's open with guys about where they are in the team, what the expectations are. So honestly, in only 4 or 5 seasons now, there really isn't much difference. He was developed as who he is and the way he was going to coach before he ever took this job.
That's interesting. I find it funny to watch because I've been following them since about 2014 or 2013 when I moved down to Frisco. And I found that the most impressive thing was just spotting a knack for the kind of combining the homegrown talent with the South Americans that he was able to spot, and then kind of giving a little bit of a veteran influence, whether it was with Figueroa or back in the day when he the Trinidadian or the Atiba Harris and some of the older guys that they had back then that were kind of more experienced journeymen. And now I feel like he's found a good mix that's got all of those elements, but the talent level is just a little bit higher with everyone he's hired. I think that's that eye for talent is nice. What type of things do you see on the staff level that you think FC Dallas has going for them in terms of something a little bit more unique, whether it's kind of him keeping the same staff around? I'm a big San Antonio Spurs fan, so I'm used to that continuity type of philosophy when it comes to sports.
Right. And that's a great example, Pop, is of a guy who continually keeps his team at a high level, plugging in pieces that other people may not consider superstars. And I think you can make comparisons between Oscar and Pop in that sense. I mean, I'm not saying Oscar's Pop. That's a long way. I'm just saying that having a good staff and reliance on it and finding guys and developing them and getting them to be better than when we thought they were when they got picked. You know, there's MLS in general, unless you're a really aged team, you're going to have a bunch of young guys, then you're going to have a gap, and then you're going to have a bunch of guys that are right around 30. And Dallas has done a pretty good job of emphasizing his young players and developing their own players and then filling in with a couple of veterans in support or in key roles. But every time you watch Dallas play, think to yourself, where would this club be if they didn't have homegrowns coming in and progressing or young draft picks coming in and progressing? Because there's four or five guys that are filling key roles and helping hold this team together that are either homegrowns or are middle round draft picks that have progressed.
Wow. Yeah, that's impressive. I find the MLS draft to be one of the weird, strange type of, I find that to be one of the stranger, carryovers from other American sports that still exists. Cause it's not none of the college players that hit, but the ones that do hit are often defenders or goalkeepers. So it's nice to see a guy like Ja'Cory Hayes having a relatively strong breakout season.
Yeah.
Cause that's kind of rare to see a midfielder or a forward have that good of a season after spending time in college like he had.
Yeah, I would keep your eye on Francis Otuahene. I like what I see there. But right. I think you're right. The draft used to have a lot more value than it does now. It used to be that the core of your team was guys picked in the 1, 2, 3, 4 rounds. You know, if you missed on each second round or third round, your team wouldn't be any good. You had to hit on those guys because you needed them. You didn't have homegrowns. Your left back for 30 games was going to be a guy you picked in the 4th round.
Right.
Now,
that's true.
Now, outside of the top 5 picks, it's a long shot, you know, to be an impact player in MLS. So there's just not the value that there was because of two reasons. One, everyone's using homegrowns to fill out their roster. Younger guys. By the time you're 22, 23, you might have missed it. And the second is because of homegrowns. The college games being bled of some of the best domestic talent. They're way gone by the time the draft comes out.
Yeah, that's...
So you might only get 4 or 5 guys at the top. For Dallas to have hit on 2 or 3 guys at the top is remarkable.
Yep, I agree completely. And I think the other... It's not draft picked or homegrown, but finding a goalkeeper like Jimmy Maurer, who's been able to sustain such a high level so far. I mean, like you said earlier, it's early on in the season, but having a goalkeeper that's played at that level, I mean, I've been really impressed. I don't understand why he was in the USL or NASL, whatever it is now.
Big fine.
Yeah, it's such a great, great pickup.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. You know, a lot of times goalkeeping is a little bit hard to scout because – if you just look for the athleticism and range, that doesn't really tell you very much. I mean, those things are important, but there's a reason why goalkeepers can play to their 40, and it's because of their mentality. It's about position. It's about reading the game. So you could look at a guy like Meyer, who maybe for some reason somebody says, I don't see a great athlete. That doesn't mean he's not a great keeper. And I'm not knocking his athleticism. I'm just saying that maybe that's why. And one reason why he's such a good ad is because Jesse, I think, actually responds to a challenge. I think when he knows he's the guy, he gets complacent, maybe not consciously, but maybe subconsciously. So once he's done with his injury, I think Jesse will actually be better because Mars here and giving him somebody to chase in a sense. But he's going to have to do really hard work to get that spot back because Mars playing amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember whenever I started following the team and we went to an event down at one of the museums, the Perot Museum in downtown, and they had an FC Dallas. They had FC Dallas players there as like a booth or something. And it was the Fire goalkeeper now, Sanchez, Richard Sanchez, yeah, was down there. And then like a couple weeks later, I find out he got traded or signed, whatever, and or sold on to Tigres.
Sold, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wow. And now he's starting for the Fire. And then we have Seitz now down in Houston, who has made a couple starts or a few starts. I've always thought Seitz was a really good, effective keeper. And so, and then you even have a guy like, I think Dan Kennedy's still in the league. So FC Dallas, yeah, has always had a good problem to have when it comes to goalkeepers, I guess, which is kind of a unnoticed. I mean, they haven't always been the best in terms of the advanced metrics, but they've been in the top half by far of keepers.
Well, they got several more in the system. Alvarez is looking really good, and there's a couple of academy kids that I have an eye on as well.
That's fantastic. They the biggest part of I think the academy is how integrated it is, and that's one of the I went out, yeah, and watched a couple matches a few months ago when the wife and kids were out of town, and so I watched the U16s, and then I watched the I guess it's the U19s when they were playing the Lone Star SC, the Austin based team that has Julian Gaines, the McKenzie Gaines team, yeah, and so they were they were, that wasn't a totally full strength squad, but it had a lot of the bigger players, and I'm impressed at how well they play together and how the mentality is just, I mean, if you push hard in one of those matches, next thing you know, you might be getting a call up to go practice and with the, yeah, first teamers, and we've seen this season alone how much of an emphasis they've made on that homegrown contract. So I agree with what you're saying about that development pipeline.
Well, one of the things that's so nice is that they bring, I've seen kids as young as 15 into the first team training from the academy. I mean, there have been kids as young as 12 before, but that was not academy guys. That was like Hyman's son. Mm-hmm. But you see 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds coming into training, making up the numbers and participating. They're not just standing there watching. They're involved in the drills. They're playing in the game. It's amazing that those guys can, aren't overwhelmed. I mean, obviously they get a little nervous.
Sure.
But the guys they bring in have level of skill that's just mind blowing to a person like me.
No,
so much fun to watch. And there's a line of guys, homegrown signings. You can, if you go watch academy games, watch the Dallas Cub, as you go down the age groups, you can see guys that you're like, I know that dude's going to get signed. That guy's going to get signed. That guy's going to get signed. There's a line of,
yeah, what really impressed me was a lot of how good certain players were on the ball, and I've always been a fan of I don't remember if it was the Germans or if it was Cruyff who kind of said, or no, I'm sorry, it's Tim Vickery, who's a little different than those, but Tim Vickery, the Brazilian or British commentator in Brazil, said that one of the things that Uruguay, which has this population of only 2 or 3 million, has done is they've kind of said that the way that they sustain success is quick thinking with the ability to know where the ball is going to go and control the ball and do everything quickly. And that type of, so I've always looked for that when it comes to spotting, yeah, a player. And I find our academy is really good at developing, yes, good on the ball skills.
Well, the two things they do that I think are an overriding characteristic of the entire academy is the one you mentioned, is the decision making thing, where I've seen a kid line up a free kick and turn around to his coach and go, what should I do? And the coach says, I don't know, figure it out, you know, and that idea of under pressure, what are you going to do? You decide. And that's something Oscar got when he was in Colombia, when a coach started him when he was like 16 or 18. I remember what it was. And he's like, I'm only 16. The coach said, so you're in. So they have that mentality through the whole academy, and they play 14-year-olds with the 17s. They play 16-year-olds with the 19s. It's like, if you're good enough, you're good enough and you're in. And the second overriding characteristic that they do that I'm so impressed with is they emphasize not just clean touch, but a clean touch with an idea of what's next. which way am I going? What am I going to do with the ball? Don't just trap it. Trap it with an intent. And you can go down to the 13s even and see that in action compared to other teams they're playing against.
That's interesting to see. I feel like the one of the best things that's happened to MLS has been the academies and this ability to integrate that type of a mindset. I'm always interested to know what happens with the academies that don't have an MLS club to feed into. That I feel like that's a sticky subject potentially for regional rights to players and those types of things. But
yeah,
I feel like it's good to be competitive like that. I mean, if it's only going to grow the game if you have clubs competing for players or clubs finding players at these one-off tournaments like Dallas Cups or wherever that they can kind of find them where it's not only development academy players, those types of things. So
yeah, Dallas does that.
I think that's great.
When Dallas goes and plays in other tournaments, they scout everybody they're playing and all the other teams in the tournament and we'll bring players back and say, hey, come for a week and we'll have you come into practice and see if it works for you.
Have there been, since you've been watching on the practices, of some of the players that have come through the team, what are some players that you remember the first time that you saw them either at like a senior team practice or when they got that chance to, they're 15, like some of the guys are now that are playing with the 19s?
Sure. Well, I remember when Oscar got traded here and I remember seeing Bobby when he got drafted. One of my favorite stories about Ramon Nunez, the first session he showed up when he was 15, I think it was. I had heard Dallas had a South American trialist and I watched practice. And afterwards I said to, I think it was Jeffries, man, I love the kid in the middle. And he said, what, the short little one? And I said, yes. And he said, that's Ramon Nunez. He's a 15-year-old local kid. Oh, whoever man. The trialist was terrible. I didn't even notice him. I remember when Drew Moore first came to practice, I remember he was a high school kid. I remember Omar Gonzalez coming out. I think he was about 15 or 16 the first time I saw him.
Wow.
You know, it's along the lines, there's been lots of players that have popped up. Shellis Hyman's kid at 12 being able to do the same drills with pros. It's not his kid. I'm sorry, his grandson, Emerson.
Yep.
Yeah. A spectacular player. I remember being at a combine in LA and walking past the U20 team, standing next to Colin Clark, watching for about 3 minutes. And I said to Colin, holy cow, who's the kid in the middle? And he said, that's Sasha Klishin. I remember that first time I saw him. So there's moments like that all along when you see a guy for the first time and it just lights up. Oh, I'll remember another one, George John at the combine. He was playing in the midfield the first day or two. And Shellis and I were talking and I said, I like the big guy. And he said, well, we like him as a defender. And the next day he played defense because Shellis basically asked for him to do it. And then they turned around and picked him.
Huh.
So over the years, there's a bunch of stories like that.
Yeah, I feel like one of the ways that MLS has set itself apart is they've adapted, or at least at FC Dallas too, is the way they adapt players to kind of fit what they need. And it used to be we need a left back. You've played left back. Kellen, you're going to be a left back or whatever.
Right.
Until we can get a left back, you're the left back. And I wonder, I like Reggie at right back, but I feel like Reggie has some pace. And this weekend, there were a couple times he made some runs forward that showed that attacking, more of a wing back type of mindset that I saw.
Yeah,
he didn't connect too often, but the intent was there. He's getting very good at that, spotting that run.
Well, he's learning. He's a good example of a player who has played a fullback in the academy in UCLA, and it's not the same thing, you know. Learning the timing and the reading of the game to get your instincts right of do I go, do I not go, are tough. They've been working with him a lot lately. They started with this phrase Oscar had, responsibility first, possibility second. So when a lot of times if there's an assistant near where Reggie is on the field, you'll hear him talking to him. Okay, go. You know, trying to work, and it has to be instinctual. It just takes time. So I think as the more Reggie plays, the better he'll be at that. And it's important to remember that he's still only 19, 20, whatever he is, you know, and he's only played 8 games. So
yeah,
we shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves. Let's be happy that the defensive responsibility is there, and we'll all watch him learn how to get forward. And I've been in the stands yelling, okay, go, you know, and it's not quite there yet, but it'll come.
Right. No, I agree. I think that's been Dustin and I's, I mean, we've always watched him a lot. I mean, I think one of the reasons we watched him a lot this season is because our seats are kind of back where the main position is. Right. But also,
yep, he's right there.
But also I've always been impressed with right backs like that. And I kind of tell him, hey, look, Dustin, this guy's from Chicago. Like, it doesn't matter who's going to be on that left side of the attack. Like, he's not backing down. I can already tell that. He's got the broad shoulders. He knows what he's doing in terms of defensive responsibilities being first. He had a few lapses, but that's going to come. But he's got a good veteran group back there with him to kind of help him learn.
Oh, for sure. And coming into this season, when myself or other people probably as well said Reggie was ready, we didn't mean that he's going to walk on and be an all-star. We meant that he's ready to get the shot. He's ready for the extended run of games. And I think that's proven to be the case.
Yeah, definitely. He provides a little bit more cover than Hernan Grana did last season. Grana was always bombing forward and never. That's why I think one of the reasons why we gave up so many goals.
Well, a characteristic that I'm a big fan of that I talk about a lot, and I think Oscar is a fan of it too, is what I call range, which is not the same as just being fast. It's a combination of speed and game reading, and it has to do with how quickly you cover your area of the field and how fast you get from one section to the other. And Reggie has plenty of that, especially for an outside back. When you want a guy who can get up and down the line a lot and all day long, he has that capability, and he also has the capability to get from the side to the middle really quickly. That's what range is. Kellen Acosta is the king of range. You look at him and watch him jog, and he covers 15 yards and before anybody else even recognized the play has changed directions.
Yep. He's I love Kellen's game, and I feel like Kellen just needs more time to get back to match fitness. And then I think he's going to be a great, he's driven. That's the part I like about him is he's driven to move beyond. And he's got to show that though. That's the nice thing. I think everybody knows
Kellen is now 100% healthy, and he's about 45 minutes game fit. Maybe the next game he could start and go maybe 60 minutes. That's what I would hope to see after he had a good 30-minute sub run out. So that's my hope this week. I haven't been to training yet, so I can't tell you whether that's happening, but that's the next step for him, is to play 60 minutes.
Who makes way for Acosta?
Wow. If you were only basing it on who's played the very best, the most this season, I would say Hayes would stay in with Acosta. But it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you have to reward the guy who was in the game when you won, which is why when they went to New York without Diaz, the first game without Diaz, when it was Hayes and Ulloa, when they won, okay, those guys get to go again, and they won. So, okay, you get to go again. They went to New York, and then it wasn't so good. So then you saw the next game, a change happened. So while you may say, okay, Acosta's ready for 60, well, unless somebody played badly, you don't necessarily just drop a guy just because, oh, Acosta's healthy again. Acosta's got to win it. Got to do something in training. Somebody else has to mess up. So that would be my suggestion. If you want to see who gets dropped for Acosta, look at the last game and see who played poorly. Ulloa got hurt, so maybe that's the person who might step aside. And so you'd end up with Acosta and Rezo or a Costin Hayes, maybe. So it'll be hard to say. Even from watching training, Oscar makes those decisions late. A lot of times he'll try three or four options during the week with something in mind, and then he'll make a decision on Thursday or Friday what he's actually going to do.
Interesting. Yeah, it definitely will be interesting to see what happens there. I think with Grezo having such a good season last season, and I'll be looking forward to seeing what happens there.
Hayes has had a really good year. It would be hard to say don't keep him in there. He and Acosta are similar in style. They both like to pop forward. Hayes did that a lot more in college, and he's finally getting confidence. He's doing it more now. If you want a pure destroyer and Acosta, then it's Grezo. If you want two guys that could morph into eights and go, then it would be Hayes Acosta.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, speaking about who's going to be playing next and everything, what are you looking forward to against LA Galaxy this weekend?
Well, lots on, of course.
Looking forward to
the big question right now for Dallas is Diaz. I mean, that's the elephant in the room, right? You have an MVP capable player who got dropped because he didn't play on turf in New England. That was the first game. And then the team has played pretty well without him. So that's kind of Oscar's thing, right? We're playing well without you. So I'm not just going to drop something for you just because you're Mauro Diaz. So
do you think that last season Oscar felt a responsibility to play Diaz, and so he had trouble figuring out where he fit in? And this season he's kind of got a little bit more.
Possibly he is getting paid a lot of money, but I think it was, right. I think it was more a situation of we had 2 60-point seasons and won an Open Cup and won a Sporting Shield and could have won an MLS Cup with this guy. So why am I not going back to him? You know, but now it's a year later. Maybe you don't quite feel like I have to go back to him now. That was the big question. Remember we talked about earlier coming into the season, was it time to restart the whole team? And they started by redesigning the defense, rebuilding it with the idea, I think, that they would use the first part of the season to try a bunch of different ideas and see which was the best way to go. And then in the summer window, I believe, you'll see Oscar turn the team to whatever he decides the best direction is. And so that's what you're getting a lot with the front six. I'm putting in Coleman because I need a 9. Ruti's not a 9. He's an off. Do they work better together? Does it work better with Diaz? He's tried Mosquera on the left, the right, and as the off striker. He tried it with 2 off strikers, Mosquera and Ruti. So I think that's the big push the next half of the season till the summer window, which direction am I going? And then you might see this summer a big change around here. If he decides that it's not with whoever, whether that would be a Diaz or a Grezo or a Coleman or hell, Uruti or Barrios, for all we know, the big ticket players who, if I don't think you're the future, why should we keep you around anymore? So we'll see. It's a big question.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about as much time as we have with you. So let's talk a little bit real quick about Third Degree and how we can support you and anything you want to plug.
Let's see. Well, right now, you know, we're at the morning news and I know people don't like the paywall. We're working with
subscriber.
Them.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm a subscriber.
Well, I appreciate that. We're working with them.
Do
away.
You get any of that money?
Sorry.
Does any of that money for subscribing to the Dallas Morning News go to you?
Not yet. We're working with them about that idea where you could go through a specific portal where we would get something. But our relationship with the Morning News was we needed a server, and they had one, and Peter worked there at the time. So it's just a shared resources relationship. So right now, no, we get nothing. But it might be soon that you could subscribe through a portal and we would get a little something. But it's not concrete yet. And so I'm crossing my fingers that that might happen. But none of us do it for a living. We're all in this for something else. And one of the reasons Third Degree has survived is because I've never made it about the money. It's always just been love of the game. So there's never been a pressure like, if I don't make money this year, I'm done. I got to shut it down. So our future is probably kind of like it is now, love of the game. There are other people that have come along and offered money, but nobody ever comes to us with money. So we are where we are.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And
yeah, thanks, Buzz. It's good stuff.
No problem.
We'll be on the lookout for those practice reports. You have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, take it easy. I'm having a really off night tonight.
Well, that's why you should drink before you record.